Mills Fleet Farm Studios. WTVX Lakeville, WRXP Cambridge, WGVZ Eden Prairie. A Cumulus station. We're live.
Live!
From the Twin Cities with the Bob Sansevier Show. Great guests, interviews, and over 30 years of sports insight.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Here's the host of the show, Bob Sansevier.
The entire process has taken way too long. I don't think anyone can believe that after 4 months of the AFC Championship game, we are still talking about ear pressure and the PSI in footballs. I think I made it clear when the report came out that I didn't think it was fair. There was no hard evidence. And everything was circumstantial. And at the same time, when the discipline came out, I felt it was way over the top, as it was unreasonable and unprecedented, in my opinion. So I have two options. I can try to end it or extend it.
He chose to end it. Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, he decided to throw in the towel on this. I don't want to continue the rhetoric that has gone on for the last 4 months. He said, I'm going to accept reluctantly what the commissioner has given to us and not continue this dialogue and rhetoric, and we won't appeal. Now, here's what I want to know. Fortunately, it's a day when we have Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense, HallbergDefense.com. We'll have him join us, and I would like to get what he thinks is, does this in any way impact Tom Brady? I mean, does it hurt Brady's case to have the owner saying, I'm not going to appeal, I'm just going to accept it? Because if he truly felt that they did nothing wrong, you don't accept something that's an out-and-out, wrong.
Yeah, you got to figure it hurts him a little bit because the owner just basically is saying, well, right, we're going to admit fault and accept our punishment. But Brady, he might still be able to, Kraft even mentioned it right there, the unprecedented, as he said it that many times. It is unprecedented, so maybe Tom Brady is hoping he can at least knock down the suspension a little bit.
Well, and here's what I wonder, because obviously Bob Kraft, he met with, he was seen, they gave him each other a little hug. I'm sure that's, it's like when, you know, guys from the mafia gave each other a hug, and that night one of them disappeared. Well, you won't see him no more. Maybe there's an understanding, look, you take this penalty, and we'll soften the penalty on Brady. Maybe reduce it to a two game.
Or maybe Goodell promised him the number one pick in the NBA's draft lottery tonight.
That's a possibility, because you know the Wolves won't get it.
Well, okay, give him to Carl Anthony Towns, and he can be a tight end for them.
We'll go back to the Kraft thing, but you saw something just before the show on ESPN Stats and Info, and the lottery is tonight. Mm-hmm. They go behind closed doors, they pull out a name, and I'm betting the Knicks will get it, because the first time they ever did it, they got it, got Patrick Ewing. I got a feeling that could happen again, coincidentally. But yeah. What was the thing you saw on ESPN?
It was in the second paragraph. They mentioned how the Timberwolves are more likely to get the fourth or fifth pick with a 35% or 0.7% chance of getting one of those, which isn't possible. We can't slip to the fifth.
Because right now they have the worst record, so the worst they can do is slip to fourth.
Yeah, only three teams can jump them. That's how the lotteries run. They only do the top three picks. And since you're the worst, you can go from one and get knocked down three spots. Math tells us that's four.
Well, it's math, but, you know, maybe it's a new math that they're using.
Knicks jump us twice, and the Lakers jump us a couple times, too.
That wouldn't surprise me either. Now, you know what? And what they need to do is just assume you're going to get the fourth pick. Anything else is gravy.
Yeah.
But I don't think, one or two is ideal.
Yeah.
Because then you're coming away with Town or Okafor. And I don't think they'd be unhappy with either one. But the other part of it, though, is on most of these rankings or the mock drafts, number three is D'Angelo Russell, right?
Yeah.
That's not exactly a consolation prize. I mean, he could be a hell of a player.
Yeah, we could just go, the Timberwolves could just go short and fast.
Well, but
don't worry about the post.
You need a guy, he could play the point, and he could certainly be a shooting guard for you. And there's nothing wrong with that, because right now your point guard keeps getting hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you have, one season where he didn't get hurt?
That was a good year.
Okay, but you can't count on it. So that, I mean, it's not terrible. But the other one, I mean, you got the two guys that are from playing overseas, right? Moutier, is that the guy that's in China?
Yeah.
Him, and then you got Porzingis from one of those, was he Latvia?
I think it's Latvia.
All right. But, I mean, these guys are supposed to, they're highly thought of. But, first of all, Porzingis is the only one who's a big guy of the two. So they're not going to take Moutier.
Now I'm starting to hear it pronounced like Madey, like
whatever,
like bidet.
Like bidet. Well, we'll call him okay. Madey like bidet. Madey like bidet. But the point is, they're not going to take him. But also, what's wrong with Willie Cauley-Stein?
That would be an option if they decided to trade back a little bit.
But at four, you think that's too soon?
I think it would be. There are people that would be wanting to go after Russell or Madey, whoever fell to number four. There's Winslow out of Duke, Porzingis. These are guys that teams covet a little bit higher than Cauley-Stein. So Timberwolves could probably drop back a few picks and get a lockdown defending center.
Well, that's what they want. They want somebody who can play center for them. Well, I still don't think if they fall to fourth, it's the worst thing. It's not a good thing, but I still don't think that it's the worst thing.
Yeah, it's not always the case that the top pick or two are the only ones that turn out to be good in an NBA draft. Oftentimes, you'll see the number two guy be a lot better than the number one. For instance, Greg Oden had a terrible career thanks to bad knees and a bad back, and Kevin Durant was taken second in that very same draft. Who would you rather have?
Sure. Yeah, it's a crapshoot. I mean, Joe Smith was the top pick.
Yep.
And he had a pedestrian career. There's nothing special about the career that he wound up having. But there's so much. I mean, there are so many things that they can do and that can happen. I still don't think Willie. I mean, I just looked at him, one of the mock drafts. Somebody had him going fourth, Willie Cauley-Stein.
Maybe, so maybe he improved his stock.
And now you heard about what Willie Cauley-Stein claimed he was told by Larry Bird. You're a $100 million player. Meaning, you know, you're going to have a great first contract and you're going to make huge money because he thinks he's going to be a terrific player.
Well, if he can blossom into a very solid offensive player, because right now he seems to have defense down pat. He got better and better throughout his career. A lot of people thought he should have came out after his freshman year, sophomore year. Now he's finally coming out after his junior year. I think this is an instance where a guy decided to stick around in college and he improved his game, especially on the defensive end. And now if he can translate it into some kind of offensive game once he gets to the NBA, he very well could be a $100 million player.
But that could be what's hurting him also, the fact that they look at these guys who aren't coming out, for some reason, some of them, they downgrade them. Well, they've already been around a while, you know, because they don't see the potential there. Now, I'm looking at another one here where, you know, it's Cauley-Stein is going, have him go in sixth. He's 7 feet, 240 pounds. If you need a center and you have to reach one or two spots, that's not the worst thing. Because they're not going to take Justice Winslow. That's not going to happen.
Not likely. I did see one projection, the top three players the Wolves should be looking at. Number one was obviously Karl-Anthony Towns. Number two,
Okafor.
They said Kristaps Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Number three, they said Justice Winslow from Duke. Okafor wasn't even on this top three list that they should be targeting.
Well, that one doesn't make sense. That one doesn't make a lot of sense at all. Now, is this Porzingis? Obviously, I'm sure the Wolves have had scouts watch him and see how he plays. He's 7'1", and he's a power. He may be 6'13". Much like KG.
Yes.
He's, you may not want to admit to being 7'1". But if they think he's that good, maybe he is worth taking and moving him to center. Or 7'1 power forward is not the worst thing either.
Well, the first comparison I saw months ago, somebody said, this is a Dirk Nowitzki type guy. 7 feet tall, plays the four.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. The downside might be since he is very light, he needs to fill out quite a bit, add some weight, some muscle, and it might take him a little bit longer to discover his game.
How do you get to 7'1 and only weigh 220?
I don't know.
I mean, how do you not have a few milkshakes in there?
I feel like at 5'9", I've gotten closer to 220 than I should.
You put me with this kid, and I'll put the weight on him.
I don't know if they want him just eating cheese pizza.
I'd take him to a few pizzerias, I'll tell you that. Him and I, we'll put another 40, 50 on him easy. Give me him for a week, and I'll change his eating habits.
No problem.
Maybe Latvia just doesn't have food.
I don't know what they're popular
for. Are they impoverished when it comes to food?
I haven't seen a lot of Latvian restaurants.
I don't know if have you ever seen a fat Latvian?
I honestly
couldn't tell you. Wait a minute. I'm going to type in fat Latvian and see if there are any out there. I don't know. I mean, I don't know Latvia very well. Oh, yeah, there's a few. Well, here, I'll tell you. Oh, there's a few good-looking ones, too. It came up, Latvian cuisine. Let's see what some of the Latvian foods are that you would eat. Fish is common. No, fish doesn't get you fat. It's consumed due to Latvia's location on the east coast of the Baltic Sea. Did you know that's where it was? I had no idea. Latvian cuisine is influenced by neighboring countries in the Baltic region. Common ingredients and Latvian recipes are found locally. Potatoes? Well, that's carb loading.
I like potatoes.
Wheat, barley. Well, beet, barley. That sounds like you're making a beer. Cabbage, onions, eggs, and pork. Latvian food is generally quite fatty and uses few spices. That's fatty? Well, he ain't no fatty. Maybe he's just running around a lot.
Yeah.
Come look, you know, sit down for a while. Sit on the couch, watch some TV.
Well, he's from Latvia, but he just played in the what is widely considered the second best professional league in the world behind the NBA. It's the Spain's AB or ACB.
I care what they call it.
So maybe he's...
That's quite a drop-off, though.
He's hanging out in Spain.
So that's... Well, okay, but have you seen footage of him play?
Not a lot. I have seen a little bit.
Is it off the chart? You say, whoa. Is it that sort of when you see it?
It's not like the first time that I watched Rubio highlights where he's just throwing the ball all over the place. That was kind of a whoa thing.
That one jumps out at you.
But he, like I said, he's quite possibly going to Dirk's awkward school for 7-foot basketball.
Oh, they have Latvian cheese. I'm a fan already. Also, beetroot soup is a big deal there.
I'll pass on that.
You don't like the beetroot? It's Coops of commonly made vegetables, bro. Noodle soup, beet soup, sorrel soup, and nettle soup. Ugh. Nettle, isn't that like a sharp thing you find on roses? A rose nettle?
I have no idea.
Let's stay away from that. That'll rip you apart. Anyway, he could be an option for them. Porzingis. Kristaps. And I still like it. This is a year where I wish your Wolves were drafting a little later so they would take Tyus Jones or figure out a way, because he's going to be one of the stars coming out of that draft.
Well, like I've mentioned, they have the 31st and 36th pick in the second round, and you can use that to move up a little
bit.
Nobody
wants those picks move up in the first round.
They're actually fairly attractive picks for teams to take guys that they're not going to have to pay this year. One of those over the seas, the stash them over there for a couple years before you bring them over. So teams do kind of covet those to a degree because they know it's nothing coming onto their books yet. And with the monumental increase you're going to see in the NBA's salary cap over the next few years, wouldn't be a bad idea to have something over there. So then all of a sudden when you get all that extra money, now you can start spending it.
Here's what I don't get. All right, I'm looking at a mock draft from the other day. And it's New England Sports Network. I mean, they seemingly know what they're doing. They have Tyus Jones going 21st to the Dallas Mavericks. How do you not watch what he did? First of all, okay, Okafor's stock has dropped because of what happened in the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
How has Tyus Jones has not soared because of what he did in the championship game? That makes no sense to me.
I think it's gone up a little bit.
21 is not exactly going. He should be in the lottery.
At the combine, apparently he blew away pretty much everybody that interviewed him.
Well, that's what I mean. I interviewed him when he was a sophomore in high school. He was the most impressive interview I'd ever done of a high school kid, and he was still a sophomore. He's an impressive kid.
Yeah.
Now young man. He will be one of the steals of the draft. The fact that he's not going to go in the top 10 or even 15 absolutely makes him that. He'll be a great pro because he will do, when needed, what he did in the championship game. Nobody's going to embarrass him on the court.
He still has time to improve his stock even more when you go and work out with fellow or eventual draftees and you run those little drills and you can try and make people look silly. He still has the time to improve his stock, and I think he's already been doing a pretty good job of doing that.
Well, we're going to talk to Andy Greeter next from the Pioneer Press, and I want to ask Andy about that too. How does one guy's stock not plummet, but drop so much, and the other guy who won the championship for them not go up higher? And by the way, today is you want to stick with us today. It's a fun day. Among our guests, we have Tim Lammers from, he's with us every Tuesday. Talk to him about some sports movies, Marsh Hallberg. But right after Marsh, at 3 o'clock, we'll be joined by Vikings Hall of Fame coach, Bud Grant. His birthday is tomorrow, and he's got his second annual garage sale tomorrow. He had a great line to Chris Thomason. Thomason interviewed him in the paper yesterday from the Pioneer Press. Thomason says, how much money did you make last year? Bud said, are you the IRS? Which is a great line. Bud is very funny. And I know you'll hear that come out when we talk to him. We'll take a quick break. Come right back with Andy Greeter. Andy from the Pioneer Press.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show. Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
gimme, gimme the ball, because I'm gonna dunk it!
That's Frank Kaminsky singing that song. We're just talking about him. Now we're joined by Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press. Andy? Is he there?
Hello?
Oh, yep, there you are. Here. Okay. Somebody, I think Helmsy didn't hit the button on time. Is that what it was? We'll get into that.
I don't know.
I don't know. I just maybe broke up there for a second. I'm here now.
Well, that's a good thing. Now, we were just talking in the last break, or the last segment. I want to ask you about this. How does, now he hasn't plummeted by any stretch, but how is Okafor, his stock has dropped a bit from the Final Four, and why has not Tyus Jones' stock risen because of what he did in the Final Four, particularly the championship game? Because I'm looking at some of these mock drafts, and he may not crack the top 20, which to me is incredible.
Yeah, I don't know what the status is with Tyus Jones and why he hasn't risen. I mean, he was the most valuable player in the Final Four and really kind of led them. So I don't know why that is. Maybe he isn't looked at as a high potential guy. I don't know.
I think the fact that he's 6'1" could be hurting him, but there have been some guards about that size that have been pretty good in the NBA.
Absolutely. I mean, as I've heard from a few draft experts, is, you know, size rises. And, you know, if you look at the point guards or guards that are at the top of the draft list, they're all 6'4", 6'5". And, you know, you look at Zach LaVine, and his size was a major attribute to why he rose to the lottery last year for the Timberwolves.
Well, I do see that, and I understand it. And he is incredibly – the things he can do are impressive. You know, obviously dunk, but he's very, you know, the athleticism is through the chart, off the charts. But give me the choice. I'll take Tyus Jones to be my point guard over LaVine any day. Just because he's a polished
LaVine's
point guard.
LaVine's upside is the ability to play multiple positions. That's why why they like him.
Now, what tonight, have you ever asked anyone in the league or with the team why they still go behind closed doors to pick out the little ball or whatever they use in the lottery to set the lottery, why they don't do it out in public?
Well, they do post it online, so it is able to be seen. But I think it's a matter of you don't want to see the sausage being made. I think that it's not as streamlined as people believe it to be. There are multiple orders that they go through to put this process together, and it's just not appealing to see. But they do have it posted, I think, on NBA.com for junkies to be able to see it, for conspiracy theorists to be.
Oh, so wait a minute. So you could watch the little ball come up, whatever it is, online?
Yeah, I believe it is posted online. At least it was last year, and I think it's going to be again this year.
Well, why wouldn't you do that on television?
Well, like I said, I think that there's multiple orders that they go through, so it's not just one ball that pops out, and this is the one that it goes to. There's different orders that they have to do. I'm not exactly a mathematician myself, but I don't think it's very, you know, streamlined, and that's why they do it in this made-for-TV event that they started in 85 when the league was floundering.
Well, I said earlier, I'm betting on New York getting the first pick, because that's what happened the first year when, Patrick Ewing was could have given a real infusion to New York, and he did. And this year, well, it could be Towns or Okafor that would go. How do you now? Have you started doing your mock drafts? You've done them already, right? Or have you have you put one together yet?
I have not. You know, Marcus Fuller did one for us last year, since he is more of a college basketball beat writer than myself. But he's the one that's handled that for us in the past.
Well, Andy, what do you think? Talking to Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press, Towns and Okafor, whether, you know, whatever order you put them in, who do you see as the next two best? Because they can't go lower than fourth.
Yeah, I think that D'Angelo Russell, I was talking with Reggie Miller during a conference call with Turner Sports today, and he was very high on him, talking about how he can come into the league and play right away. And I've heard that from a number of people, that they both like his playmaking ability and his ability to shoot the ball, and he's 6'5" as well. So he's up there. Emmanuel Mudiay, who had committed to Larry Brown at SMU, but then had troubles getting in, and then took a year in China. So he's a little bit more of a relative unknown, but he's up there as well. And then Kristaps Porzingis, the Latvian 7-footer, is also looked at as maybe in the top five too.
Well, obviously, I mean, you could disc. I think he can. Russell, I think, should be in play because he can play the shooting guard too. He's not just the point guard. So I think if the Wolves have a shot at him, if they have the third or fourth pick, but I keep asking and wondering why Willie Cauley-Stein could not be an option at number four. It's just too soon.
Well, I think it's that, and then I also think that people may be a little bit diminished on him just because I think he is 22, 23, and given the top end of these guys coming in at 19 or 20, they feel like they have a higher potential, while Willie Cauley-Stein is a great player who's going to go in the top 10, is maybe more of a known commodity and maybe doesn't have as high a ceiling as some of these other guys, they believe.
Well, see, the problem with that thing, and I understand exactly what you're saying, but the problem with that, when these teams think like that, well, you know that, okay, let's say Cauley-Stein is hitting his ceiling, but you know he's a pretty damn good player. These other guys could go the other direction, as many top picks have. Because you're not sure what you're going to get out of them. You think you're going to, you're basing it on, obviously, potential when you're seeing more. And that's the other thing why, you know, Kaminsky could be in the, the bottom third of the draft, because I guess people figure you know exactly what you're getting with him. It's not horrible either, what you're getting.
No, I mean, didn't Kaminsky win the Naismith Award?
Yeah, I mean, he had a hell of a year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it goes back to, again, the issue, like, with Tyus Jones. I think the fact that he's 6'1", and that's what hurts him, and it's just, he's a winner. I mean, he's proven that. He proved it at high school level. He certainly proved it at the college level as a freshman. So I'm baffled by, you know, somebody's going to get a hell of a player when they draft him.
Yeah, I think so. There's a number of people talking about, a dream situation where you get Okafor if you're the Timberwolves, and then you package 31 and I think it's 36 that the Wolves have in second round picks to come back into the first round and get Tyus. I think that might be a dream situation, but I mean, the Wolves are in need of a true backup point guard at this point.
Well, that's exactly what my guy here, Hellboy Helmsy, David Helmer, said. I don't know if the 31 and 36 can get you the 20th pick, though, or the 21st pick, which is about where you're going to need to land. Maybe it would, but I don't know. I mean, after the first round, a lot of these guys, it's not that great a draft.
No, absolutely. And it's looked at as, you know, with the second round of the NBA draft, those guys are clinging to the back end of rosters. So it's not like, you know, the NFL draft where those guys are coming in and looked at as guys that can contribute. It's more of like these are fringe guys, and the Wolves have made a history of selling those picks for cash because they have such a young roster and have been losing money. So that has been kind of a stopgap for them in previous years, and it sounds like they won't be having both of those picks come draft day anyways. Either if they sell it or if they try and package it in some sort of deal.
Well, if they could get Towns or Okafor, Okafor and Tyus Jones have played together AAU and certainly at Duke, and it'd be great if they were on the same NBA team. However, so what? I mean, just get him on the team because he is going to be a hell of a player for you. And I don't know that he'd be that far off. Certainly he's not as big as Rubio, but I still think that Tyus will have a great pro career. But I don't think he should be a backup either.
I mean, I don't think he should be a backup, but I think that, you know, when you've committed to Rubio like they have and he's still a young player at 24. I think he's the penciled in starter for sure.
Sure. But then again, he has to stay healthy, which was it 1 year he's been healthy, right?
Yeah. One out of four.
Yeah, so the odds aren't exactly, although maybe he'll have a run of good health. You never know. Historically, though, most players who get hurt a lot continue to get hurt a lot.
That's
so
true.
We'll have to see how that one plays out. Now, what is your, what do you think? Just give me the number you think. I mean, there must be a spot you think they're going to wind up with tonight. Where do you feel it'll be? One, well, two, three, or four?
I think, the odds are the biggest odds are 35% are at number four. And I think that given the Wolves' luck in either sliding down or maintaining their spot in the previous 18 draft lotteries that they've been a part of, those are some odds that are hard to buck. So I would imagine it being number four, and then it would be their luck to have someone that's more of an unknown if it goes, you know, Towns, Okafor, and Russell.
Well, who do you think there's any chance that Okafor could actually still be there at four?
I don't think so. I think that, he's been the consensus number one until March Madness, so I don't think that he'll be on the board at four if that's where the Wolves end up.
Okay, let me add here. What if the 76ers at the first pick? Who do they go? Or how do they go with their big men?
Sure. I mean, that's something that we talked about last week. I think that they would still go with who the top-end talent is.
And then deal with
it. You know, they had Nerlens Noel, and they still took Joel Embiid. So they have a history of having a top-flight player at that spot and still drafting a big man. So who's to say they won't do it again and try and, you know, just acquire assets and make those decisions on who stays around later on.
And who they wind up dumping. Well, we appreciate it. Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press, thanks for taking the time with us. And we'll all know tonight, 7:30, between 7:38, they will announce the order of the NBA draft lottery. Thanks a lot, Andy.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Come right back. Talk to Tim Lammers, syndicated movie journalist. Got a few things I want to talk to him about. Movies, of course. We'll be right back with Tim. We are joined by Tim Lammers, syndicated movie journalist, reviews on Care 11, News at 11 on Fridays, Mondays on the Tom Bernard Digital Show. He also can be found at his website, directconversations.com. Speaking of conversations, Tim, you have a meeting with a guy that needs to do a sports movie.
Yeah, really. Well, I'll suggest that to him for you, Bob. It's Bill Pollad, of course, one of the Pollad boys. But the one that's not involved with the Twins, involved with filmmaking, in fact. So.
Well, you know, there have been movies. Well, there was one movie in particular about the Twins, you know, where the kid took over the team.
What was that, Little Big League?
I think so.
Yeah, really. Well, you know, and of course they've appeared in other... it seems that to me, well, that was the footage at the end of 42. There was a twin in footage there. And also, they chronicle them briefly in Moneyball. Because they were the team that brought the Oakland A's big run towards the pennant to the end.
Yes, so they've had their little marks, but I mean that 87 team would be interesting. But I mean, again, you have to find some sort of a hook for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would be sad, but something about Kirby Puckett's life would be. I think people would watch that. Certainly around here, they would.
Oh yeah, certainly. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of great stories out there. And we were, you know, on email we were talking, you know, it's just amazing how long it takes some of these films to make it to the big screen, if they make it there at all.
Well, and the one that we're talking to Tim Lammers, the one that caught me and made me think about that was When the Game Stands Tall with Jim Caviezel. It's about a coach out in California. His team won 151 straight football games. And it was, you know what, they had one little scene in there, Tim, where they were at a coach's meeting and some other coaches complained that they recruited. It's the thing that all these successful teams hear when they win, the accusation by other coaches that all you do is recruit.
Well, right.
Your parochial school or, you know, a Catholic, that's going to happen.
Sure. Well, you know, and I think, what was the time frame of that one, Bob? Because I did see it myself just recently on TV.
That was 2004. Was the year that they actually that was the year that they had the streak was broken, and that was the year they focused on.
Okay, so you know you're looking at a good. I think the movie came out maybe last fall or the fall before that.
No, I think it was this past fall. It was 10 years after the streak was broken.
Yeah, and you know films. I mean, coincidentally, Bill Pollad's new film Love and Mercy that took years, 10 years to develop. So that's not a tale unfamiliar in Hollywood for a film to take that long. I think maybe the reason that When the Game Stands Tall came out when it did is because it's technically considered a faith-based movie. And certainly, you know, those are the hot thing in Hollywood these days, you know, faith-based movies. So if somebody has a hook, all of a sudden an idea that's been floating out there for years might be the hot thing all of a sudden and they'll rush it into production.
See, I having seen it, I didn't take it as a... I mean, De La Salle was the high school. Obviously, there's a connection to religion with De La Salle. But
right.
I did not take that as a faith-based
really
movie.
I didn't feel that either. But, you know, they actually promoted it. I remember when it came out. I mean, it was promoted as a faith-based movie.
Well, also, you had Jim Caviezel who played Jesus Christ on film.
Yeah,
so,
that's a pretty good hook.
So maybe that was what they were trying to, you know, they were pushing a little bit for that one. But I did enjoy the movie, and if you happen to see it on cable, it's worth watching. And the thing we talked about A lot of movies. There's a lot of stories out there, or sports stories. Like, we were having fun last week about the Flategate, but other stories and other people. Michael Jordan has not really been a movie about him, but him, LeBron James, these guys like that would be interesting. But I guess if you don't have a tragic hook or something, you know, where you come out of nowhere and things, you have a real great success, maybe people don't think it's as interesting. I mean, I'd be interested in, those Minneapolis Lakers. Those teams were interesting. I mean, George Mikan and the guys that played then, Bud Grant was on that team. Bud Grant would be an interesting subject.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the good thing about these guys is that, you know, they had such strong characters throughout, you know, George Mikan, Bud Grant, strong characters throughout their career. Unfortunately, these days with, you know, even the superstar athletes, it seems to me that they have a dark side that there's just no rosy way of playing that up.
But that's also part of the story, you know, of that other side. Like, well, I mean, Kirby Puckett was a great example of that, unfortunately. There was an other side. Not, I don't want to say dark side. There was an other side to him that many people didn't know about.
Right. Yeah, and that's what sort of makes it difficult. And I think that's in part responsible to the times we live in, too. I mean, especially these days with the flaws that come out of, you know, with athletes. And a lot of times, too, they might step on their own foot by putting out a stupid tweet or something. But, you know, the coverage is constant, and we're just exposed that much more to aspects of athletes' life, everybody's life, than we've ever been before. So, yeah, it would be kind of difficult to find an athlete or any person of inspiration without finding some dirt on them.
Well, how often, Tim, because you've been, you know, you movies is what you you focus on. How often have you said to yourself, that would make a hell of a movie, and then at some point somebody made the movie? Does it happen often, or has it happened at all?
You see, I can't think of a specific instance, generally the stuff that catches my attention is just something I haven't heard of before, and that's the problem with, you know, maybe, you know, with sports movies or whatever, unless they do something truly incredible. I mean, you know, a story of a team that, you know, won so many games in a row or whatever, or, you know, it just has to be something that really has to set itself apart from something else. So I can't think of anything offhand, Bob. But, yeah, it is something I'm going to have to start pondering.
Well, you know,
and I'll call you back when
you,
I get that
when you
idea.
Come up with it.
I had, what about you?
Well, I mean, one of the things I had mentioned, I would love to see something about Bronco Nagurski.
Oh, sure.
You know, because it would be a period piece, and I mean, he seemed like he was a very colorful character.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I love those sorts of period pieces, and you know, Bob, you and I like those same sorts of films. I mean, I think that's part of the reason that, you know, we shared our enthusiasm for Unbroken.
Yep.
In that era, and it's just, I love seeing those sorts of eras come to life on the big screen. I mean, it's something really, as much as we can read about it and see maybe old film about it, you know, it just takes us to a different place, which is really what movies should be about.
Well, and one guy that comes to mind, too, is Ted Williams. The guy was a fighter or an ace during World War II, and everything he tried, baseball, even as a fly fisherman, when he was fishing, he was the best in the world. How often can people say that?
Yeah.
Whatever they try, they're the best at.
Yeah, well, and think about how many movies you can think of with fly fishing in it. I can think of A River Runs Through It, and that's about it. So,
but actually, you know, it sounds like a Poland movie, A River Runs Through It. That's this type of movie. I will say this, by the way, and I'm sure it won't come up in your conversation. I had said when it came out, I just didn't think I'd have any interest in seeing 12 Years a Slave. It was on cable this weekend. It's a phenomenal movie.
Oh, it really
I mean,
is.
I had no idea it was as good as it is. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, he's really aligned himself with some great projects. He produced the Tree of Life with that was nominated for a Best Picture Oscar. 12 Years a Slave, Brokeback Mountain, he produced that. And then finally, after it, I think it's been more than 30 years. This is actually only the second film that he's produced. But his production company is based in Minneapolis. With the new stadium going up, and maybe if we can get some friendly overtures from the legislature in terms of tax breaks for filmmakers, who knows what can happen.
So is he? Has he ever? When you've talked to him, or will you ask him if he has any interest in ever doing a sports movie? It would make sense with his family's connection. to the Twins.
Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when we chat next week, Bob, we'll bring that up, and we'll see what kind of answer I can get out of
it. Yeah, I'd love to see what he says. Well, Tim, as always, I appreciate it. Tim Lammers, he's a syndicated movie journalist. His reviews care on Care 11 News at 11 on Fridays, Mondays on the Tom Bernard Show. He also does his own website, directconversations.com. So you want to check out Tim at directconversations.com. Tim, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Have a great week, and we'll talk next week.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. We'll take a quick break. Be right back. Three questions, three answers coming your way.
The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Three, oh, it's the magic number. Yeah, it is. It's the magic number. Somewhere in that ancient mystic trinity, you get three.
This guy annoys me. I just don't give up with that.
He gave me some yesterday.
Did he really?
He did.
Which one? Remember?
It's the only one that I... Doesn't count. That's like new. You can need something like 15 years earlier.
December 6, 1963. I'll take what he gives me.
Okay.
That's how sick, bad it's gotten. I'll take what he gives me. Marsh Hallberg, by the way, that's the voice you heard. He is going to join us for Threesome. His segment comes up right after that. Marsh Hallberg, of course, from Hallberg Criminal Defense. We'll be talking. I'm guessing we'll talk a little Deflategate in that. We also, this is a treat, after your segment, we got Bud Grant.
No way.
Yep, birthday tomorrow.
I'm
got the big garage sale.
Around. Wow. Is that tomorrow? Okay.
Yep, tomorrow's his birthday, 88.
And how many garage sales has he done?
This is his second.
Okay, because I remember the big one a year ago.
He had the great line to Chris Thomason from the Pioneer Press. Chris asked him, so what'd you make last year? Are you the IRS? That's so
none
Bud.
Of your damn business.
I talked to him this morning. I said, Bud, that was a great line. He got a little bit of a laugh. It's your birthday tomorrow, too, right? He goes, yep. Tell him to bring presents.
How old is he?
88.
Gosh. Holy cow.
He's still as sharp as they come.
And I think back to going to games in the early 70s or late 60s, and just seemed like cold, not bother the man, you know? He just... tough
no,
guy.
And he made sure his players it didn't
yeah.
bother them either.
Yeah, it's none of these heaters and stuff. Those are for wimps.
Yeah, yeah. He would give his players the Eskimo story about
know.
How well. I mean, basically, very very quickly, that these guys. I mean, they would work on pipelines and they would they would work out and they didn't let the cold bother them. It's not because they, it's not that because of where they came. They just grew up with it. I'm not gonna let it bother me. It's not like their blood was any different. Or anything else about them, that they physically were built to not be cold. They just decided, well, it's cold. We're going to deal with it.
I literally just came from a luncheon seminar about leadership and everything else. And one of the stories the speaker was telling about was about how at Quantico and teaching all these SEALs and, get them up at 3 in the morning, throw cold water on them and make them run 100 miles and all that stuff. And he said, what is the purpose of it other than, squeezing out the guys that just can't handle it? He says, it's making them comfortable in uncomfortable situations. You're just comfortable with being uncomfortable.
That's exactly what Bud did, too. Yeah. He was ahead of his time on that one.
And that was part of the whole theory. Huh? Anyway,
we got three questions. I know that Helmsy... That's his new nickname, Hellboy Helmsy.
Okay.
Because that's his baseball. It's baseball season, so we're going to go with the baseball version of his name, Helmsy.
That was it, huh?
They just call it Helms.
Would you get that like in third grade or what?
It's got to have the C on
me.
The Helmsy's got to be part of it.
Helmsy. Okay. I like Hellboy. Okay.
All right, I like Hellboy too. All right, Helmsy, what do you got?
Attention, Bob. I have three questions for you. Number one, will luck be on the side of the Timberwolves tonight, or will they get screwed?
Well, you know what? You would think the law of averages would say luck will be on their side, but I don't think that'll kick in for another year. They'll get screwed. They're not getting the top pick. They need one of the first two, because then they wind up with Towns or Okafor.
Yep.
And I still like Okafor, but a lot of people. And this is a question, Marsh, that we talked about earlier. How does Okafor's stock have dropped from the Final Four?
Yeah.
But Tyus Jones has not risen greatly since the Final Four, when he had a phenomenal Final Four. That one baffles me.
So what's the consensus? Who are people saying they'd pick if they got one or two?
Well, Towns seems to be a guy that would go one. Okay. That's what a lot of people seem to think. Now, the Wolves, Jerry Zagota told us several weeks ago that he believes that Flip has always liked Okafor. And Flip's comment, which I agree with, is you look at the body of work. You don't base it on one game. Which I mean, that's sensible.
Right.
And most of these GMs, though, aren't sensible.
Well, we've got, you know, the constants of the universe is that Minnesota never seems to, something happens in sports. Somebody gets injured, somebody gets suspended for beating their kid for a year, somebody gets something, that every single sport seems to get shot in the foot at some point with the problem. So I will be the eternal pessimist on Minnesota sports.
I just figure they'll get the fourth pick.
Yeah, exactly. We got, you know, the glimmer I always think is Teddy Bridgewater coming here. This seems like that can be the final turning point that actually starts to turn.
Yeah, we'll see.
Minnesota, yeah, whatever. Okay.
We'll see. What do you got for two?
Number two,
yes,
the
sir.
Twins face Francisco Liriano tonight. Has he become a much better pitcher, or was he just always suited better for the National League?
I think he's become a better pitcher. They got a guy in Pittsburgh that works with pitchers that has done a great job turning careers around. And he was phenomenal when he first joined the Twins before he got hurt. I mean, he was on course to be the Cy Young winner. And then,
oh, yeah,
he, you know, then he had the injury, and it just, for the Twins, he never really got back to where he was, but it's worked out there. I will say, there's a lot to be said for pitching in the National League when there's no DH, you know, and every ninth mm-hmm. batter is the pitcher from the other team. So you're going to find, you know, but that's not all it is. I mean, he has become a better pitcher. He's become a season, what is he, in his 15th year now?
15?
Yeah, is that how long he's been in the league? Or since he...
Sounds high.
Sounds high.
Well, take a look at it, because he came in with Joe Nathan, right?
Don't argue with Sansevier. He's always
right.
No,
I mean, I maybe it's not 15,
sounds
but I think
high.
It is. Okay. I'm going to have...
Because his rookie year was like 07 or 08. Well,
let's take a look. Well, but he when he joined the... I'm talking about when he joined the Twins.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily when he pitched for them. His first year pitching for them was 05 when he was 21. It's now 15, so that would be... Well, that's only, what, 11 seasons. But what was the year that he was, that he actually joined? He was signed, oh, yeah, 15. He was signed by the Giants as a free agent in 2000, so 15 years in baseball.
See?
Major League,
don't
but in baseball.
No, I was arguing.
And don't ever do that. You just get slapped on like that.
So how many years did he pitch for the Twins?
Oh, okay.
Well, for the Twins, he pitched for them for the first time in 05, but he joined,
yep.
He came into the into baseball 15 years ago.
It's 2015 minus 2005.
What's 2015 minus 10. 2015? Third base.
When you're down there, it doesn't count.
It counts when you become a professional.
Nah.
He's been a pro ball player for 15 years. That was my punt. Okay, I'll give you the best year that he had. That 2006. That's when he had the 12-3 and the 2.16 ERA.
Oh.
That was pretty darn special.
Yeah.
And then didn't play in 2007, 2008, 391, and then 580, 362, 509. And then he wound up, let's see, then he was a 531, Chicago White, 5. He goes to Pittsburgh, 302, 338, 296. This year he's at 296. Yeah, he's gotten things in much better order. What else you got?
And finally, Irvin Santana has reported to extended spring training. What kind of impact will he have on the team when he returns in July?
July?
Yeah.
Why he's got 50 games, right?
80.
Why am I thinking it was 50?
July 4th, because that's the standard
PED
suspension.
Okay, yeah, July. Then it would be certainly July. Well, I think that he could have quite an impact, because if they can hang out where they are right now, they go into Pittsburgh, what, 4 games above 500?
Mm-hmm.
If they could keep it around there, they could have a shot at a wild card spot if they can sustain this. When he comes back, it is. We've talked about it earlier in the week. It's like a midseason trade for a quality pitcher. And, you know, if he's still on the steroids, that's even all the better, because he's going to throw even better than ever. Still going to be in the system yet. I will say this. The other day, because my throat was shot last week, so my doctor prescribed a corticosteroid, a steroid. I could feel the roid rage coming on that night.
Well, you're looking more muscular already.
Well, I'm looking beefier, but that has nothing to do with this steroid. Actually, I think the steroids have bloated me considerably over the last week. But I got mad at him. But I always get mad at him.
I didn't even do anything. I was just sitting here doing what I usually do, which is nothing.
It's the drugs he's on.
I was going to rip his head off his neck and, well, I don't say what I'd do down his neck. But anyway.
That would hurt me.
As long as you can still do your job, I don't really care. You could do it. Hey, the headless horseman was able to ride that horse without a head.
There you go.
I think you could probably hit those buttons without a head.
We could try that out. I'll just wear a blindfold. We don't have to tear my head off.
Do it like Bazooka Joe to see how that works. where you can't actually see your face.
He has no clue.
Do you think anyone beyond under the age of 45?
Dinosaurs of us know what Bazooka Joe is.
You don't know what
Bubblegum.
That's, do you know what Bazooka Joe looked like?
I haven't seen him in a while, but he was the basis of the little comics on the rappers.
Yeah, but his turtle. Yeah, you couldn't see his head, though, right?
Right. It's pulled up, his turtleneck and stuff.
Yeah, quite the big turtleneck. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Upon our return, Marsh Hallberg's here. We will have the Marsh's Sports Law segment with Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. And then the coach, Bud Grant. After that, Jim Suhan. We got a loaded. We're loaded. Damn. We'll be right back.